God gives me great pleasure. Kathy number two. Kathy two.
Hi, I'm Kathy T. from Raphaelic. Okay, so what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. As a surprise, I was raised in Santa Maria, I was born in Santa Maria, California. I was born on New Year's Eve. My mother was in the hospital, and the nurse said, if you wait a few hours, you can have a New Year's baby. And she said, this is my fifth child, I want the tax deduction. So I was born at 8:53 p.m. That's how I made my debut. So I was raised in a non-alcoholic family. I have five brothers, four older, one younger. My dad worked at Vandenberg Air Force Base. That's why we live in California. They're from Topeka, Kansas. Thank God they moved here before I was born. I can't imagine living in Topeka, Kansas. But anyway, so my mom was a stay-at-home mother, and I, you know, just had a normal childhood. I was diagnosed with severe rotating scoliosis when I was 14 years old, and the orthopedist told my mother I was going to have to be in a brace, living from my hip to my pelvis until I quit growing, which would be about 18 years old. And I fell apart, and I thought my life was over at 14 years old. So my mom took me to a chiropractor, and needless to say, I never wore that brace, and I see a chiropractor to this day. That's why I'm standing straight. So I thought that my life was over when I was 14. Well, when I got into high school, you know, everything was finding yourself, and I didn't know where I fit in. I had all of these geek brothers. My oldest brother was he was a senior when I was a freshman, and they had KRHF, which was the Getty High School radio station, and he was the DJ. And he would be on the speaker all during the day, and I would be so embarrassed because the fun was with the geek, and everybody was great, you know? And I didn't ever want anybody to know he was my brother. So anyway, I started hanging out with all the people that he didn't. And it was my friends from junior high, too, you know? So I just went with the group, and we all started finding out where the parties were on the weekends, and, you know, the girls would get in cars, whoever was going to drive, round up all the girls, and we'd go to our parties, you know, and I would always have a curfew. I'd never make my curfew. I'd get grounded for the next weekend, and it was like that for probably the last 2 years of my high school, that I could never make it home from my curfew. My mom didn't really know that I was always drinking because I hid it really well, and I could never drink enough to get really sick or anything like that. So I didn't think that, you know, if I had a problem drinking, I'd just was party girl. So after I graduated from high school, I went to Hancock. I wanted to be a preschool teacher, and after I found out that I would make absolutely no money doing that, after 2 years of school, I decided that I'd find out about computers, because computers wasn't anything, so you guys know I'm not that young. Computers wasn't anything, and they didn't have it offered anywhere, except for Santa Barbara Business College. And Santa Barbara Business College you had to pay for, and it was very expensive. So my parents weren't convinced I would go through with it. So it was a 9-month program, and it was self-paced. And I ended up, you know, accelerating through the courses. And I got my certificate, which was for a CPT, which is a cassette processing terminal, which was actually like a floppy disk typewriter kind of thing. So I went to a temporary agency, and I told them I had this experience, and they sent me to this job at Vandenberg, proofreading the space shuttle manual. And we had to proofread all of the errors in, you know, the typos that were in that manual. And, I mean, 8 hours a day of proofreading, that was the most boring job I ever had. With my computer experience, I'm not learning anything about it. So I went to another temporary agency. This girl went on a undetermined absence, of a leave of absence, but it was, you know, not determined when she was going to come back. So that's good, and it's a technical job. So I did get the job because she did never come back, and there happened to be a guy that my brother played baseball with that was the IT guy, and he knew all the software, and he, you know, was the one that taught everybody computer programming, well, not programming, how to use the computer, basically. And so he taught me a lot, and then I ended up being the program manager's secretary, and I had this really great job, and, you know, it was like I accelerated from all the way 20s to my 30s, and then we lost our contract. Quintron left Vandenberg, and all of us lost our jobs. And so I wasn't sure what I was going to do. So I decided that I would just apply for a job as a receptionist somewhere, you know, because I did have my secretarial skills, and I got a job in solving at an architectural firm. And it was great. It was like being on vacation after I got off work, you know, because I lived in this little town and everything was new. And, of course, I started dating the bartender, the man in bed. And he was a magician and a bartender. And so I got to know everybody in the whole town. And, you know, that was really fun for a while. And I still had to support myself, so I started bookkeeping at wineries. And so I would get these cases of wine, you know, as like Christmas bonus or, you know, whatever bonus, a day that ended in Y, you know. And so I just have all this collection of wine, and, you know, I would drink wine. Just, I thought it was just, you know, occasionally, casually. It just happened to be occasions or frequent occasions. So I worked at the Hitching Post in Buellton as bookkeeper. I worked at the Gainey Winery as bookkeeper, and so I also did the shipping for Hartley Austin Winery. So I had them also having just cases of wine and surplus or whatever, or, you know, misprinted labels or anything like that. There's all kinds of stuff, you know. It was just wine coming all the time, and it's like wine country, you know. People come to visit you, they want to go wine tasting and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I just was a wine drinker. I didn't think that it was that much of a problem or anything. Well, the bartender and I didn't work out so much, because him and tequila were a lot better friends than him and I were. And so I remember, I think it was his 48th birthday, and he wanted to take 48 shots. And he tried. And, you know, it was like, I haven't seen myself with this guy for very long. He's not going to last very long. So I met this other guy who became my husband, and we got married in 1998, and we decided that we were going to have children. We weren't sure if we could. I did get pregnant in 2 years. They gave me the pamphlet. It said advanced maternal age. I was like, oh my God. So that immediately freaked me out, you know. So I'm thinking of all of these things. We're going to get this invitation for my 20-year class reunion. It's on August 19th. And I'm like, oh, my due date's not till September 15th. This will be fine. So I go to my 20-year reunion, and my son decides that that's the night that he's going to come. And so my husband is four Roman Popes later, I'm in the bathroom. My friend said, I think your water broke. I go, wait, I'm only 36 weeks pregnant. He's not ready to come. She goes, oh, I think he is. So I'm like totally freaked out. Then I start having a little bit of contractions and stuff. I'm thinking, I'm very, this drunk guy is going to have to drive me to San Far because we live in Fulton. Here in San Maria. So now this drunk guy takes me to Steve Hospital. So anyway, long story short, we did get there. my son was born at 1:48 a.m. by C-section because he was transverse. The kid wouldn't like be in the right position to make it a little easier or anything, you know. So here I am at C-section, and my husband's standing there, and he's just totally freaked out. We got the whole NICU team standing around, you know. The anesthesiologist looks like he's probably, you know, 100 years old. He's just waking up out of a dead sleep, and he's going to hit this thing in my spinal. He's a blocker. So my husband passes out, and we have to take him out and give him some alcohol. I'm just laying there by myself, all just going, oh my gosh. Okay, so anyway, long story short, he was born 4 weeks early. He ended up staying in the NICU for 10 days. He was totally fine. And so, you know, I was a really good mom. I didn't drink during my whole pregnancy. I didn't drink the whole time I was breastfeeding. I joined a mother's group so that I could learn how to be a mom. And so it was new moms of the 80s. And everything was, you know, going just peachy clean. I was so glad that I had a little baby finally. All I ever wanted was a full baby, my own baby. And I finally had this baby. And he never slept. And I would have to drive him around the valley so he'd fall asleep in his car. Let him sleep on the lawn in the car while I would sit by the door and let him sleep in his car seat because if he did not, he would wake up. And so we got over that, and so he finally started sleeping through the night, and in 2002, about 2 o'clock in the morning, my husband wakes me up having grand mal seizures, and he is transported to the hospital, and they find a spot on his brain. And so they do their tests and MRIs and everything, find out all the tumors that need to be removed. So it was very dark and very, very depressing. He did have his brain surgery. It was very, very traumatic. You know, they do take your whole front of your forehead off and remove the tumor was right here, so he had his whole right front lobe removed. And they said that the tumor was 15 to 20 years old when they removed it. And it was not cancerous, but they said they hoped that it would you know, resolve his seizure issues, which it didn't. And eventually the tumor kept growing back, and he kept having problems with it, and it was very traumatizing for both of us. We, you know, had, I was just having to work. He was periodically working because he would have seizures, and he would lose his license, and he was working at AJ's Bird, and he was a chef, and he had a seizure one night at work, and they had to fire him because he was a liability, and he was having a hard time getting a job, and then his tumor was growing back. He kept having seizures, so I couldn't take care of him anymore, and so his parents, he was from Seattle, Washington, so his parents came and got him and took him back to Seattle. And then after that happened, my mother passed away. And so I was just totally lost, but I also knew that I had to be there for this little boy, that all he had basically was me. And, you know, I have a very supportive family, I have a very large family, but we're also very close, him and I. And so it was very hard for me to go through that time. I decided that I would go back to Hancock and get a degree. I decided to pursue nursing, which I was way too old to start that at that age, but I thought I could do it. I did get my CNA license. I got all my prerequisites. I did get my AA because there's so many classes you have to take to get in the nursing program. But I got my AA. I finished my CNA. I was working as a CNA while I was waiting to get into the LVN program. I got in the LVN program after waiting for 3 years, and after the first semester, I could not pass catheter insertion. So I was dropped from the course, and I was devastated, and I didn't know what to do. And I felt like I was, you know, so small and so lost, and I needed to be so supportive for this little boy, and I was so scared, and I was so full of fear. And I knew that, you know, my wine was always there for me, and it was always a good pal when I needed it, you know, and on those occasions it was great. But then when I started drinking because I was feeling so sorry for myself, it just made me feel worse. And I would be crying all the time. I would be upset. My son didn't know what to do with me. I ended up getting a DUI in 2009. I came into AA. I met Joanne, who was at the Pyramid meeting, and she asked me if I needed a sponsor, and she told me that she would be my sponsor. And I came to AA because I didn't want to go to jail. And I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I didn't think I had a drinking problem. I just wanted to get the cord off my back. So I ended up going to jail anyway. So there was no reason for me to go to AA anymore because I already had to go to jail. So then I started the DUI program, and the counselor said, just because you got a DUI does not mean you're an alcoholic. So I ran with it. I'm not an alcoholic. So I completed all that, got all that behind me and everything, you know, and I was going about my business, and my father was declining in age, and he could no longer live by himself. And so I had to move in with my father, and he still was capable of doing everything. He's very OCD, so he could still do everything. He's in a routine. I can tell you what he does from the time he wakes up until the time he goes to bed at night. Because he does everything the same every day, all day long. And so I felt like I had no purpose. I felt like, oh, his house is, you know, he bought it the day before I was born. So it was an old house, and it was falling apart. He had done no upkeep to it or anything. And so I have these five brothers. I'm calling them all the time. I'm drunk. I'm telling them how I can't handle any of this, how everything is all on me. Nobody's helping me do anything. Poor, poor, pitiful me. And the more I complain, the more they let up on me. And then, the more I called, the more they wouldn't answer. And I was getting really angry, and so I drank some more. And then I got to the point where I couldn't handle even anything in my life. My dad was capable of taking care of himself, and I had all of this stuff that I had to do. I didn't really know how to do it. So, you know, being the alcoholic that I was, it was like this big old huge boulder instead of thinking I could take a pebble at a time, you know. So I was just constantly overwhelmed all the time, totally depressed. Then I'd drink, I'd get angry, I'd cuss them out, I'd drive people away, and I kids and family, nobody wanted to be around me. And then, so I got so pitiful that I decided that I would drink and drive again with my son in the car. But Scotty was 18. So I got my second DUI. 9 years, 11 months, and 2 weeks. since my first DUI, and there's a 10-year bracket. So I got charged with a second DUI. So when I went to court, I had already gone to, oh, okay, I got a backup. So I got arrested with my son was with me, and thank God he was 18, so they let him go, but they impounded my car because the car was registered to me, so they couldn't let anybody else take the car. So I went and spent the night in jail, and I'm thinking the whole time, I just ruined everybody's life and mine, all in one fell swoop. And all I could think of was, how am I going to get out of this? There is no way I'm going to get out of this. And so, of course, you know, nobody, I could call in the middle of the night to come pick me up in Santa Barbara. And so, of course, my oldest brother or my sister-in-law are the ones that always are bailing me out. So my sister-in-law came to get me at 5 a.m. and proceeded to tell me about her brother had just proposed to his girlfriend, and they just got engaged, and they had drinks while they were celebrating, and they left their place that they were dining at, and it was raining, and they got on a dark road, and he slammed into the back of a bulldozer on the side of the road and killed her, and he lived. So she's telling me this while I'm already, you know, have beaten myself up all night long in jail, so it's 40 degrees in there, you know, and I can understand how coherent I was anyway. And she's telling me this, and she said, what are you going to do with yourself now? What are you going to do with yourself now? I said, I think I'm going to go to AA. She said, I think that's a good idea. So that was on June 10th, the next day. And so I got out on June 11th. That night I went to my first meeting, and I've been coming ever since. And when I told her that I was going to go to AA, she said, well, I thought you said you weren't an alcoholic. I said, I don't think I'm an alcoholic, but those people know what they're doing. And so I think I better go and find out what it is. So, to tell you the truth, when I came here, I really didn't think I was an alcoholic. I was not convinced, because I could stop drinking. Well, how did I stop drinking? I went to court, and they said, we are going to put you on the secure, continuous alcohol monitor on your ankle that will test you every 30 minutes for alcohol, or you can go to jail. So I wore that thing, and I was not going to violate and go to jail. So that's how I had to cold turkey. So I had to come to AA. I was like, how do these people do it? And I come in here and I see my nephew. I'm like, oh my God, he's going to see me. And you know, it was the best day of my life. And so I came into AA. I got that same sponsor that came to me 10 years before that, and she said, are you ready now? I said, I'm willing to go to any length. Let's do it. So my sobriety date is 7/7/2019, and I did my steps with her. She was such a wonderful sponsor. She was so loving, wonderful, soft, patient, and caring. And if I didn't get it, she just would, you know, put it in layman's terms, or, you know, give me other resources to look at. And, you know, if I would ever have a problem, she'd show me in the book where to look, you know. And it was just so wonderful, and like, going through my four steps, she didn't make me feel horrible like I felt about myself doing it. And that was just so refreshing, you know. And then being able to be real with somebody and be able to have the guidance from somebody that really cared about what was able to, should I say, she made it so that I was able to understand. because I didn't know there was a big dictionary until I worked in the central office. So there was a lot of things I didn't understand. And I also started getting involved as soon as I came in because Cindy was rounding people up and I wasn't part of the, you know, people that was, I was willing to be involved, and she's like, we got a job for you. And it was great being on the committee for the Christmas luncheon and going to a party with 110 sober women. I have never had so much fun in my entire life. I would never trade it for any of the partying days that I had for anything. And that's what made me feel like I have arrived. It was so refreshing and so wonderful. And after that luncheon, I went over and talked to my oldest brother and sister-in-law, the ones that always been there to bail me out, and I was telling them about, you know, just this program and what we do and, you know, how much fun we were having with all of this stuff. And my brother looked at my sister-in-law and he said, is that my sister talking? And so I just wanted to read something out of the spiritual experience in the back of the book. Page 567. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. And I was talking about how after I came into AA, how my whole perception had changed. And it wasn't that the world had changed, it was that I had changed. And the things around me were becoming beautiful because I was learning how to be grateful. And I was learning how to appreciate stuff. I was learning how to live in gratitude. And I was describing to somebody how a hummingbird came to my hummingbird feeder, and it felt like it was the most joyous thing just for that to happen, because it was, you know, just nature at its finest right there at that second. And they said, sounds like you had a spiritual experience. And it just kept on happening, you know, more and more. And I just really, really am so grateful for this program. I don't think that I could ever have imagined that I would appreciate the little things in life that I do today. And, you know, what I have is enough. And I'm so grateful that I can say that today, because I was always one of those persons that, he's got a motorhome, I want that, you know. And I don't have to be that way anymore. Today, I'm satisfied with what I have. And I hope that when I keep coming back, I will just keep growing and growing more and more each day. And, you know, just the spiritual growth that I've experienced is something that I can't even describe. So I'm going to close with this. I went crazy to find sanity. I lied to myself and everyone else to see the truth. I walked through hell to understand heaven. I experienced death to feel life. Addiction could have been my demise, a horrific and lonely end. Instead, it brought me to a beautiful new beginning. The madness tore open my soul and introduced my spirit to life.
All right, thank you, Kathy and Kathy, for speaking. Let's give both first speakers another round of applause.